Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more. All for presentation designers, managers, and presenters.
Okay, we are at the 2017 Presentation Summit in Florida, and we kind of stepped away from the arena of presentation people to have a conversation with two great presentation industry guys. And I'll preface this by saying this is the guys podcast. Sandy's not with us, and this is awesome. And it'll also remain at the same rating, guys. Just so you know.
Good. Get that out of
there. Okay. So as you heard in the introductions, we have Mike and Tom with us, and they're both very entrenched in the presentation world. They're also two of the newest Microsoft MVPs for PowerPoint. So I think we've got Tom being the newest. I think Mike, you're right there, and Nolan, are you the third?
I think so. It's been like 4 years. There was a little gap before.
We're not a big group. It's Microsoft's very selective, which is saying a lot. So Tom, we're not going to say like regions of the world you've actually worked in, but what's your role in the presentation world? Because it's good. It's big.
Wow, that's a very good question. So we work mostly outside of on-screen presentations. So and it was born through our agency, and our agency sort of grew as the on-screen presentation people. People would come to us for PowerPoint presentations when they were speaking, when they were getting up. In terms of my role in the presentation world, we started getting requests for things that were way outside of on-screen presentations. So printed documents in PowerPoint, interactive documents, videos, animations, things like that. And the fundamental crux of it was they just wanted it editable. So industry-wide, graphic design industry-wide, I think there's a big shift coming where corporate clients don't like PDFs anymore because they can't edit it, they can't change it. And when you purchase graphic design from an agency that sends you a PDF, you are buying a product. You can't change that product. When you get a PowerPoint file that is the exact same design quality, you are buying design. You're buying graphic design that you can change and you can work with and you can edit. So that's sort of where I sit.
Wow, there's so much in the
that's no, exactly there. It's a mind.
Yes.
So, Mike, what's your role in the presentation world? Because it's a little bit different, but it's amazing.
It's quite different, but my audience focuses on education and sales. So, for example, Lockheed Martin or Boeing or something wants to respond to a government RFP, request for proposal, and they put together an oral presentation to acquire that work, a $500 million contract, and then I help the team get together the oral presentation. Or we'll do something for education. For example, ATD, the Association for Talent Development, will ask me to create certified training for PowerPoint. So we'll put together a two-day seminar with a book and et cetera. And then not only do we create the slides and the content and the messaging, we also administer it as well.
So I'm just going to preface it and say you need to also explain that you completely understand and have been a key instrument in developing graphics for slides with the company you've
hence the name. Sorry. Yes, Billion Dollar Graphics. We focus on visuals, turning words and ideas into powerful, compelling visuals, visuals that help people understand even the most complex concepts at a strategic level and a tactical level. How do I do it, and how does it fit into the big picture? Contextualizes what we do.
You guys have your elevator pitches down pat.
I love it.
I gotta work on
I make good slides.
He did it. He started. I was like, I gotta come up with something.
I make pretty pictures.
Okay, so this is more of a, we're taking a very small sample survey right here, and we'll start with Nolan. Nolan, are you mainly Mac or Windows based?
Personally, Mac. I work on a Mac. Yes. I mean, I create stuff with PCs and Mac. Okay, I'm sorry. It was a one word answer. Mac.
Mike?
Mainly Mac.
Mainly Mac. Tom?
100%.
Oh, say it again.
100% PC.
100% Windows.
Okay. Say it that way.
Yeah. In your face. We don't allow Macs in the office.
And all of our design team is on Windows based as well. But so when we're talking Adobe, there's no difference in the programs. The bigger difference is in like video editing. Which program are you going to use? The Mac only ones or the ones that kind of work cross platform, which I've completely adopted now. It took a little financial stress to realize that it was costing me too much money not to have everybody using the same thing. And so we're Windows-based. We have a number of Macs that are used for only specific projects. They're kind of checked out type of things. So I was just taking a survey. We've had some interesting conversations here at the summit, and people kind of extolling the fact, or you know, saying how happy they are that they're a designer with a Mac. But you know, then I asked the question, "How's that PowerPoint thing going?" Yeah, it doesn't seem to work like I was seeing that demo in that session. And yeah, well,
I do have a PC. Sometimes I got to go over it for very specific things. But we keep hearing, we keep being promised that they're going to get more similar. This sort of from Microsoft, they're going to get closer together.
You know, this is a big, it's almost could be like, what's news? Is it been, there's a lot of talk about VB code being released in the Mac, and I think it's on the Fast Insider now, but it's coming, which will mean a lot of the custom add-ins and stuff will most likely translate over, not immediately, but, you know, there's progress being made there.
That's a good question. I've been meaning to talk to some people here about Mac add-ins, but that's a good question. Once they get this code the same, are all these add-ins that all you guys, you know, use and create on the PC, are those going to be like instantly available on the Mac?
They can't, because even the installers, they don't know which, you know.
Well, but
if you know how to install an add-in, you can.
But will it?
You've got the PBTAM file.
Yeah, most of them are.
Will this be easier for somebody like Steve Rinsberg to say, like, oh, now I just have to like run it through this thing and.
I don't know.
I have no idea how it all works.
For Steve's sake, I say, and for everybody's sake, I
hope so. Yeah. Yes. Because as you know, I don't think I use any Mac add-ins, do you?
No,
they're very few.
The Noun Project.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah,
but oh, yeah. That's really, yeah. So that's kind of, yeah, there's that, and that's the hard, is it an add-in that adds, you know, it's installed on computer, or are they the web-based add-ons?
Right.
That are, good which point. Is the reason Microsoft's going to them, because they're universal. They're pretty cool. I mean, most of them you bring up on your mobile device too.
Yes.
And access, but they're not nearly as
powerful. I'd say that's one of the biggest personal disappointments over the years of staying on a Mac or just not having all these add-ins. And again, I have them on the PC. So every time I really need, you know, one of Jamie's or Steve's like tools, like it's there and I'll open up the Mac or open up the PC and, you know, do what I need to do and close it down and go back
port
to the
it
Mac.
Over. It's, yeah. Because the slide's still the slide.
But, yeah.
Okay, speaking of slides, here's another question. And I don't have a ton of these pre-planned questions, so we get to get into conversation mode. But this one was kind of a curiosity thing because we have such diversity in not only regions, but you know, areas of expertise. Are you using PowerPoint, Keynote, Prezi, anything else? Legacy PowerPoint or legacy meaning anything? Are you using Office 365 or another version?
I use Office 365. We do a couple Keynote projects a year. I've got one or two clients that like it. And I just did my first Google Slides thing the other day, which, you know, I'm not happy about it. I'm not proud, but I did it. But that's about it, I think.
Mostly, the vast majority is PowerPoint. And we've had people ask us for a Prezi.
Mm-hmm.
And we ask them for what purpose. And usually it's because we want our presentation to look cool. So they don't realize what they're asking for, and we recommend that they use PowerPoint, not because PowerPoint's better per se, it's just because it's a ubiquitous package.
We have the same thing. Every time a client asks us for a Prezi, we say, what you really want is a great PowerPoint, and you've just never seen one. You know, you've just never seen a PowerPoint that has that much wow. Not yet. You know, not yet. And that's always the issue, is that they'll come to an agency and say, we want a Prezi because Prezi does great stuff really easily, but it does a very limited amount of great stuff really easily, and then everything outside of that is impossible. So we always say, you know, what you really probably want is an amazing PowerPoint, not a Prezi.
And I also I used to do Prezi a lot and stopped doing it because I stopped getting asked, and I still get asked maybe once a year, but for me it's not worth it to keep up with the software if I'm only doing one project a year. So I'll just convince that one client to, you know.
Yeah. So the reason I asked that question is it was our last episode. Was it the last episode, Nolan? We just talked about alternatives to PowerPoint. Yeah.
Yeah, sounds right.
Okay, good. Get myself on track. No, it'd actually be because we're recording this one way early. So our one prior to the summit was that. This one's going to post a couple of a little bit afterwards. But I also released an article talking about the new, quotes, PowerPoint and the fact that people come to us asking for PowerPoint. Because the analogy I came to thinking about it was, go back 5 years and people would say, I need to make something that doesn't look like PowerPoint. What can I use? We'd say, well, how about this? Like, that looks phenomenal. What'd you use? PowerPoint. Yeah. Because we weren't using bullet lists. We were using what's now kind of more of a common styling. Large imagery that flowed seamlessly. You know, there was areas for text, but not master. Everybody thought that was phenomenal because it wasn't what they deemed in their mind as PowerPoint. And now it's just morphing. Now it's just changing to the point where people have the nice design criteria, but now they want to look and animate and be in motion differently. So the new PowerPoint is actually just using the program, like you're saying, Tom, in a better way or a different way that's not.
Yeah, I mean, years ago, I used to say, you know, we create PowerPoint presentations that don't look like PowerPoint presentations. That was the easiest way of saying it.
That's still 100% accurate.
We're stuck in a paradigm.
Yeah. We still don't tell prospective clients that we animate until we can show them. We won't say that we animate in PowerPoint until we can physically show them what we do.
That's nice.
Because people have these massive preconceptions about what animation can do. Yeah, which is terrible. And everyone's wrong. Because animation done well is just good design. It's good motion design in PowerPoint. So we don't say we animate until we've got a portfolio in front of them saying, oh, by the way, we animate. And those conversations are generally, they go, we didn't know PowerPoint could do that.
I didn't.
We had no idea.
You showed me stuff this afternoon that I wasn't aware. Like, that was brilliant. He had a contextual menu. Well, not a contextual menu, but a menu. You click on the button and then these options come out. And he had a wiggle. You've seen in the day, Flash kind of had that wiggle, and he just manually had it wiggle through motion pads, and it's brilliant.
I missed this session. I'm kind of hoping some of these are videotaped. I know they're all videotaped. I'm hoping they're available because I didn't get in there, but now I'm going to just go ask you to look at your computer.
Yeah. Oh, do so.
So, by the way, I know we don't, you know, we do have a photo because Lori graciously took a photo. So Nolan's in blue checkered shirt, long sleeve. Mike and I are
blue
in
shirt,
yeah, blue
sleeve.
Checkered sleeve. Tom is stunning here. He's got not only the blue striped shirt with small anchors because we're in Florida, I'm assuming, but he also has the sports coat that is blue anchors and Florida palm trees that coordinates. It's just, yeah.
We got
fantastic.
The blue memo.
Yeah. Everybody got the blue memo. Okay, so here's another one. And anybody else, we guys come up with things to talk about this because this is kind of the end of my pre-planned thoughts here. But I'm more curious because I don't know either one of your background. But what is something you specialize in for presentation design or actually maybe the delivery that people will find interesting? You can't say I know how to make bullets.
My gosh, no. I want Tom to go first.
Oh, so we have a number of contracts with big corporate clients to produce social media videos.
Oh.
So we have service level agreements that we will produce a 1-minute video within 24 hours for our clients, a number of our clients. And that is because everyone's pushing mobile now. Everyone's pushing video and social. And being able to get something out quickly is oftentimes the most important part of a video process online. Excuse me.
That's awesome. So do they give you like a context
They'll give us a script.
A message. Oh, okay.
Excuse me. So they'll give us a script. And within 24 hours of that script delivery, we'll give them a 1-minute video.
And I'm hoping you charge appropriately.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that sort of on-demand service is very much sort of service level agreement based. But being able to get a video online on a newsworthy event within 24 hours on social that's branded with their branding, that has some nice kinetic typography, that has some relevant iconography coming in. It's nothing really complicated. Like, it's nothing terribly complicated, but it's video. And that's the most important part for them, is that it's movement. It's something that grabs people's attention. So that's probably one of the things that we're really...
That counts as a specialization, definitely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's pretty awesome. Hey, so side question on that, because I just had a conversation with Glenna Shaw about this. Do you caption those videos? Because PowerPoint and a number of programs actually do video captioning. But, you know, when you're looking at Facebook, actually I had a conversation with somebody else about this. I would love to see the statistics for Facebook, because I bet that the statistics of looking at a video with no volume is like astronomical, because everybody's watching in their cubicle, on the bus, you know, where else they can't. You can't play volume. So
I think that's interesting because, well, Facebook has just gone volume first now. So when you go onto your phones on Facebook, it will always default to volume on.
Yes,
whereas
that's
it used to be
problem.
Volume off, and it was this massive issue. And we do hard code subtitles into a lot of our videos.
Okay.
We actually type it out,
and
we'll animate that subtitle on.
Okay.
So we'll put a nice, you know, a gradient black bar across, type the text in white, and we'll throw that on the slide. If not, generally the information that we produce on the slide is enough. So it'll be an infographic about, you know, 25% of people in this category did this. That's written on the screen anyway. So you don't really need to caption the voiceover if the voiceover is even 5 or 6 words longer. That's pretty much the core essentials.
Yep. Very cool. Yeah, it was a cool. Using the conversation I had was using PowerPoint's video captioning, which a lot of people don't really realize is there and it's very robust, was to you could actually use it for my analogy I drew up, is I could actually create a video for Facebook and use PowerPoint to author it because it can do half that work for me or that lower thirds, which is kind of cool.
Which is a new feature, which is fantastic.
Facebook hasn't put in auto captioning yet, right?
Well, a lot of times I think the captioning is not going to match your voiceover track. A lot of times you'll have music only, but you'll still have messaging running through it. But they don't. That'd be kind of cool.
I'm sure it'll come eventually.
Well, that Adobe auto audio capture stuff is pretty.
Now help me out here, Troy, because I'm not sure. And look, I haven't played with it yet. But the auto captioning of a PowerPoint video, is that a video that you pull into PowerPoint? So, for example, if we created an animated presentation with a voiceover, saved it as a video, would we then have to pull it back into PowerPoint, and then PowerPoint would read it again?
I'm not going to give away what Glenn is doing a tutorial on, but we might be talking about exactly that. And the captioning is pulled from the speaker notes. Right. So you can actually put in any scripting you want, and it's pretty darn cool. So sidetrack. Okay, so Mike, something you specialize in presentation design or delivery, because you're on the delivery side a lot for your clients, that people find interesting.
I'll summarize it quick. Give us your stuff, and I can convert it into something that works even better. And I'll explain what the heck that means.
Yeah, because all of us offer that. You know, give us your stuff, and we'll make it look better. You know,
so the difference is we're focusing on the content and the messaging, and what we're using is behavioral psychology to make sure that works. So empirical evidence that validates that what we're doing is going to increase understanding, recollection, and adoption. And that's clearly kind of what we do. The whole point of is that you understand it, you can remember it, and you can adopt it, and or it's persuasive. So when someone gives us a sales presentation, is it going to work? And so we're using behavioral psychology, the latest stuff we find, to make sure that it's going to be as persuasive as humanly possible. And the science behind it is mind-blowing and completely geek-huggable worthy.
So I have a degree, and one of the degrees is in psychology, but it's an emphasis in child psychology, which, to be very honest, just means I can work
same with as C-suite, right?
Any executive sales team in the world.
Ouch.
So
I'm now geeking out on you now.
It's fun. Yeah, it's really actually our daughter's roommate is studying a very similar track, and I end up talking to her so much. Like, this is just, I totally read. Yeah, the neurocognitive.
You know, it'd be fun. I'd like to know our degrees.
Oh, I've got a poopy degree.
Because I'm guessing
we're
it
in Florida. It's a lot of degrees out here. Like,
I'm guessing it has nothing to do with what we actually.
Okay, start off, Nolan.
I have a degree in theater and dramatic writing.
But you actually used that both your presentation life.
But come on, that's not a path. I mean, that's not a...
Nolan got a degree to join the circus.
I was in the circus before I got my degree.
Oh, before it led to the degree. Okay.
I did go to the Moscow Circus School. No degree.
Okay, Mike, what's your degree in?
What is it? Bachelor of Art, BA. Yeah. So I digital visual art. It was bioengineering.
You started with bioengineering and you switched to visual art.
Yes, because I went to Baltimore School for the Arts for fine art, painting, sculpting, and all that. And I was like, I don't want to be a starring artist. So I said, you know what? I'm going to go because I love science, hence the behavioral psychology. Yeah. And then I said, I don't want to be a starving artist. So I went to bioengineering and I said, oh my gosh, it's so boring. And then I said, all right, I'm going to go to digital art, which was kind of science and art put together.
That's
pretty cool. Yeah,
that's exactly. I know. Which is why I feel like a schmuck because you had an awesome thing and you're weaving it in.
I have an undergrad, just an AA certification, which was the start of things. Then I ended up with the child psychology I didn't want to go the clinical route. And then my full degree was in recreation administration. So running fun places, which is what I did before all this.
Run a fun place.
I run a very fun place now.
Very relevant.
Hopefully all my staff will agree, but it's all good.
I started a law degree, didn't finish. I started a philosophy degree, didn't finish. And then I did theater, the same as Nolan.
Nice.
Mostly in lighting design.
Interesting.
So, which is painting with light.
Which is understanding visualization. Mm-hmm. So totally, some of the lighting LDs that I know are they totally get it.
Yeah. And then a previous career was I was a speech and drama teacher.
Ooh, makes sense.
Yeah. So I taught small kids how to say poems.
Do you do speech coaching?
No. good question. No.
Tom also has an interesting background in the fact that you're natively from?
Australia.
And you lived for at least part of your career in Asia.
London, India, Thailand. Yeah, moved around a bit.
He's been around. Yeah.
Very colonial.
Just followed the motherland home, really.
And you're
Baltimore, Maryland, and then I moved to DC. Ooh, 60 miles away. Ooh, adventure.
What do you guys think of?
I think I live less than 60 miles, or about 60 miles. That's from the rule of thumb. Born,
we're born and raised in 60 miles. So, and
that's
away.
I'm 2 states away, but I'm 60 miles.
It still hasn't translated to the East Coast. You know, those colonial locations like to keep it close.
That's half of Australia's commute.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, we were talking to somebody from, where was she from? I think it was Philly. I was like, you can drive through your whole state in a day. I can't even get to another city in a day. So California based, a little different.
Everything is, if you took a city, a big tall city, and you squished it down and spread it out, you got LA.
Yeah. I mean, Troy, come on, you can't get to LA in a day.
Oh, yeah. we do actually, if it's a Monday morning project, we leave 3 hours for our commute at almost any time. So we generally come up on Sunday evening and just get a hotel because it's worth it.
I'd start looking at small helicopters. It sounds more cost effective.
Presentation world. So what is something cool that you've done in the last, this year? So 2017, just something kind of really nifty. And actually, we should just go with Tom and your interactive navigation that you mentioned. Because
Tom did a very cool session.
I actually sent a couple people to your session you talked to one person at least, or you're going to, because she has that exact methodology and had a question about a trigger navigation pane that rolls out. And it keeps popping out. And I actually said, I don't know, but you know what? You got to go to Tom's session and ask him. But anyway, so I know that's so you're basically creating interactive apps within PowerPoint.
Yes.
For that one. That's cool.
Yeah. So we've worked with a number of clients to produce a sort of nonlinear presentation, so conversation-based presentations where it's more one-on-one. It's definitely not for a scenario where you're getting up in front of 200 people to talk to them. It's for the scenarios of where you're sitting down with five or six people and they're looking at your laptop or they're looking at your tablet. So being able to have conversations about that rather than just listen to me talk for slide one to slide 50 is where it's really sort of started changing for a lot of sales teams, a lot of BDM teams that we've noticed. So we've done some really cool stuff with Caterpillar, the big machinery brand, Hitachi and Intel, Coca-Cola. We've been working with a lot of companies to really try and enable their sales teams to go that second step.
Have you kind of integrated, because Zoom is just basically custom shows on steroids, in my opinion, but have you been integrating like that?
Not at all.
No, because of compatibility?
Not backwards compatible. Yeah, that's our biggest fault.
I think Zoom actually works really well because the images still update, but it goes to a nice fade, but.
It's very hard to produce a menu based on the images of the slides. We've always found in the studio that falls apart a little bit unless you do click and then it zooms into that slide. Otherwise, you're just looking at a tiny JPEG of a slide that you're clicking onto.
Yeah.
In the backwards compatibility sort of side of things. When you get that interactivity and you do zoom in, it's wonderful. And then you can zoom back out and you can move around. And that's great. But when it does go back to an older version of PowerPoint, just seeing a tiny little JPEG of a slide, it's really hard to design something that is aesthetically pleasing with, five or six of them.
Something cool. That you haven't already talked about before.
Yeah, no, I've been doing more and more with Morph this year, and we did a video. We did a 3 or 4 or 5 minute video for this whole climate report, whatever, and we did it all with Morph. I actually worked with a designer who's here, Noah Wildman, who did a great job on it. And yeah, we had a voiceover. We didn't use music, but we had a voiceover and everything, and we just worked the hell out of Morph basically, and it was fantastic. Had some timing issues. Morph is, or rather, I should say, the performance as you really start pushing things. Sometimes performance of the machine,
you've got to go by the numbers, not by the PowerPoint.
So there's a lot of tweaking back and forth. So not a little frustrating, but we got it done, and the client loved it.
That's awesome.
Because again, they wanted a quicker and probably cheaper solution than
was the final file a video?
Yeah.
We've replaced a number of After Effects segments with just PowerPoint Morph, exported out at a high def and added into the video project. Easier to edit, much faster. Kind of a bragging point for us after the fact. Yeah, did you know that portion was done in PowerPoint? No, it wasn't. Something cool in this year.
BMW Financial Services. Basically, they wanted to empower their staff to be able to convert their textual based slides into some visual representations of them, and they had to be usable. So we came up with some graphic representations that were very easily editable for the lay user to use, and we had some information.
Because,
like,
you know, most people opt for non-usable products and slides.
Well, the
define
thing is,
usable.
Define
you mean
usable
editable by the team?
Editable by the team, very easy to modify, intuitive. You don't need to have any training to use it.
Oh, no special software?
Not at all. Yeah, and, you know, it looks very cool, and yet you can just start typing and you figure it out. Oh, I want to add this piece, you can add it. The other one was Wyndham. It might have been 13 months ago, not 12 months ago. I don't know.
And then you can't I don't want to hear it.
And, stoked because I'm working on a new product. I'm very excited about it. It's this tool that basically you have your slide and you have whatever your words are in there. And what it does is it does an analysis of the words and recommends visual representations of it. You put it together to tell a story.
Wow. Sounds kind of like haiku. We'll find the imagery it's not haiku, but haiku one of the few things that does the image search based on content that's there. So it's probably very, very cool. Cool thing that we've done, it's probably just another big show. We just worked in scales that are, actually, you know what I'm doing right now? I leave the summit here early from before it ends because I have to go to Spain. I get to go to Spain where this meeting's happening. I did the US show and that was very fun. The Spain one is 360 degree in the round, but it's a little bit different. So we're thinking really, so think of a lampshade, but the outside of the lampshade's solid black. So you don't see it. Everything's projected on the inside. So we have these graphics, you know, it's a long, thin graphic, but the far left edge will actually touch the far right edge when it wraps around. So you got to kind of think abstract. And then actually the PowerPoint presentations are not 16:9. They're wider, but they pop up in four locations. They seamlessly blend in with these giant circular backgrounds. So that's a very cool abstract way of thinking.
I've always been so jealous of all the large screen stuff you get to do. So I got to do a 90-foot presentation this year. And I work with Slide Rabbit, also good designers here at the conference. So that was nice.
Cool. Very, very cool.
And did we do that in Keynote? I think so. Yeah.
So here's a really cool tip for anybody that doesn't know it. This is actually, if you work in Keynote and you're going to do an ultra wide, in other words, something wider than 16:9, Keynote does this amazing thing that's totally undocumented and you can't actually control it. It just, like most Mac things, it just does it. So if on the equivalent of the master slide, so each slide is a master slide in each case, if you take your background and you actually, let's just say you've got what's 357? Let's just say you've got 316:9 wide. 5760x1080. I got to think.
Good job.
What my numbers would be right offhand. But anyways, let's say you got that. So what you do is you put the background in as three images instead of one large image. This is incredibly important for Keynote. So if you do just a simple wipe up transition, not everything goes at the same time. Keynote takes each of the background images and it staggers them so they kind of go as a stair step. Dink, dink, dink. And your whole content does it, the wipes, the animations.
So these are transition wipes.
These are all your transition effects if you're doing an ultra wide and you build the background because you've set the slide to, you know, your pixel, which is, again, a blessing to be able to actually set the pixel size, not this conversion of inches thing or metric or whatever you're going to use. It just works in pixels. But if you actually put three different or two different background images, then I got crazy on it on this project we were doing. This is more than 13 months ago, or 12 months ago, so I can't talk about it. But I started putting in let's divide it up into nine different little background images and see what it does. And they all stagger across. It just creates these incredible visuals.
Is that a bug that's turned out really great?
Oh, it's totally a coding error.
Happy accident.
Totally a coding error that just you can, but you have to totally play with it because you cannot predict what the results will be. So yeah,
is it based on complexity of the image?
No, it's just based on number of images. So instead of just use a white or a push up, instead of it just going up as one giant thing, it'll literally take the left one, start up, the right one will start a fraction of a second later, and the third one will start. So
you can force that a little bit in PowerPoint with Morph. If you take those images and you put them on the pasteboard on the next slide, but in slightly different places, because they'll go at slightly different times and give you a similar sort of.
Oh, speaking of Morph, Lori just finished this project, and it got to be, unfortunately, the client just didn't understand the logistics of it. But So with Morph, a lot of times we're using images on the slide prior, so they're off slide, they're not visible, but they're that we use Morph transition to get them in, and the other ones exit out. Well, the client didn't get that, and they were adding in new slides. Like, but they would make edits on theirs while we were working. They're like, oh, I'll just give them the new slides. So suddenly, they're like, it doesn't look good anymore. We're like, what do you mean it doesn't look good? Because we're looking, you know, we run it. We're like, where'd all the images go that were off the slide? Because they never saw them. Like, no, those are really important, like really important to make that visual effect.
We're so used to cleaning up our decks, like get rid of that image, get rid of that image. And I've deleted images I shouldn't have because I was cleaning it up. I'm like, oh, I don't need that image. And I needed it for more. I forgot.
Yeah. So it's a new client education thing. Like you need to be aware that we're building stuff on the previous slide and the post slide to make these effects work.
Yeah. Well, but Tom, you were saying like you provide PowerPoint files to your clients most often.
We do.
So, I mean, with all the stuff you're doing, it's got to be incredibly easy for them to screw it up. Like, with one right? I mean,
Yes and no. We always caveat it. You'll always be able to edit the text quite comfortably and quite easily. You'll be able to edit shape fills. You'll be able to edit outlines, the basics. But if you're really keen to get into the animation, I always say save yourself a private file and pull it apart. I love that people pull it apart. I want them to break it. I want them to destroy it.
Because then they have to come back for you to fix it.
No, because they learn like that. And the whole thing is PowerPoint is not taught at a design level. It's not taught in corporate levels in any way, shape, or form that is good enough for what is expected of PowerPoint or presentation design. Standard design courses will take you through, or standard PowerPoint courses will take you through the technical abilities.
It has always amazed me. The analogy I always use is like if you're an accountant in corporate America, you were taught how to use Excel at some point. And you have to use Excel because that's a tool. But if you're a whatever in corporate America, using PowerPoint day in, day out, zero training.
Yeah.
Ever.
And it's a requirement of the job as well.
Yeah.
Right. 9 times out of 10. I mean, I don't know about the US, but in Australia, 9 out of 10 job ads will have must be proficient at.
Well, they list all of Office for the most part.
Yeah, define proficient.
Unless you're one of those companies that's like using Lotus or something.
Yeah.
One
of those companies that died in the 90s.
No, Lotus is still very entrenched in some corporate places.
One of the things I noticed that Tom was doing that's brilliant is to make sure that the end user doesn't break it, he'll put things that would really break it on the master slides. Mm. So unless you're proficient enough in the software to go to the master slides.
How many times have we had clients say, I can't remove this thing? You're like, and you just say, it's on the master. And they're like, I can't remove it. Okay.
Well, once they get to the master, then you got a whole. But it's usually somebody that's worked in Keynote because things on a master slide, because they're not the same methodology, even though they're called the same thing. Keynote users intuitively understand there's things on this level I need to get to, where PowerPoint, we're like, those are put there so you can't mess with them.
Yes.
I try to steer people away from it.
And we still can't lock things.
I'm waiting without XML. I'm like, I will hug Microsoft when they let us lock it.
I've done a few add-ins that I've tested. Yeah, we've never rolled them out as a long-term proficient thing.
Well, if you make them, I'm buying them.
I just use.
Okay.
There are a couple out there, I think.
I don't know why you would lock.
To prevent clients from screwing things up.
But isn't that the same as just sending them a PDF?
No. They have that editability. I mean, think of your things.
So they can still edit it.
There's certain things we don't want them to edit.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, right. Okay. So you mean individual
objects?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Not a whole deck.
Not lock the whole deck edit it.
No,
right.
No,
okay.
No.
I mean, I'd be happy with Illustrator's lock. Like, I'm going to lock this element in place. And if you want to move it, you have to go and consciously click it and be blamed.
Yeah.
You are taking responsibility because you did something. And it's usually, it's innocent. Say you have the slide deck with the logo on every slide. Not that I'm advocating that. But, somebody moves the logo on one of the masters. And suddenly, you're in the nice show. And all of a sudden, what was that? Because, they're projecting the thing, 20 feet wide. And that one logo jumped and everybody took notice of it.
It's a visual glitch.
It's
one
of those things that, is so possible. Because, with design, it's just a tiny bit of code. Like, with Designer.
It's all code is what I've been told.
With Designer. Which actually has been popping up more and more and is actually becoming, I'm admiring it more and more as it gives sort of decent ideas and I'm not using them, but I'm like, oh, it's not bad. But it will lock certain things.
It does.
Yeah.
Because it's XML code. Yeah. It's available.
Right. And it's actually really cool. It's that's locked. I wish I could do that myself.
I can tell you. It's actually, I don't think this is under NDA. I'll talk about this in a non-NDA way. We got to work with somebody that was working on Designer from Microsoft, and we got to work on a extension of it, just kind of being hey, how would this work? What was really cool is because they had to kind of tell us how designer works a little bit more. And if you don't know, designer is actually a huge undertaking because literally Microsoft has an internal design team that for all their templates, they actually create all those custom layouts per template. That's why it doesn't work on everything because they're actually all custom layouts. So we're working on this one and it's really cool to figure out that, oh, I could lock things with this. Like if you give me a tool that lets me build these, I could actually lock things. I don't know how far I could take it, but it was really, really cool. I'm sure based on just the little teeny glimpse we got to see that designer will continue to expand and become far more functional in the future. I don't know about that. You know, it just reinforces that good design is needed and you can't drive with templates or
designer presets. Won't say this is a, am I allowed to swear?
Technically I should bleep you out.
Can you believe this later?
We're trying to keep an iTunes G rating.
Okay. Designer won't say, this is a really
bad
image. Get another one.
They'll just say,
that's why we'll never get another one.
But you know what it will do is if it's low res, it won't blow it up to full screen.
But likewise, it won't say, psychologically, this is a bad image for the...
your content's poor, your message is bad.
Yeah. No, it'll never and that's why the flexibility of the industry is never going to... We're never going to be out of a job.
Right, right. But it's getting... But the, you know... AI and everything is going to get closer to that. It'll, you know, I mean, if you say I can easily see the day where your header says all about lions and you put a picture of a tiger in and it says, it'll pop up and say, how about one of these images that we've stolen from Google? And say that you could use, even though you probably can't.
We could talk about designers and the... Tom and I had a great conversation. Here's my takeaway. There is a new standards coming out for presentation experts. We don't want to use the word presentation designers. And the really important thing is that it's a skills standardization, which is really important because how many people, just like we're saying, every single application, I know PowerPoint. Well, do you really know how to?
Really good or really, really, really good is the standard at the moment.
I can open it.
I mean, everybody knows PowerPoint. I mean, elementary school kids, it's crazy the level, but do you know it on an expertise level? And that's the certification. It's definitely a skills certification because you can't certify design because there can be bad design and people can say it's good. They're wrong, but
your feelings are wrong.
Design is subjective.
But
my boss loves pie charts. Well, he's wrong.
Are you creating the presentation for him or is he giving it to other people? If you're giving it to him, brilliant, use it. If you're not, if he's giving it to other people, who cares what he likes?
We just got shot down on a recent project, and it was kind of a, you know, you work with a client, and you kind of get a feel for their styling, so you can turn things around pretty quick. And this was not presentation; this was strictly graphic design, and it was a couple of just really quick turnaround ads, print web. I don't know. There's a combination of them, and I'm like, oh sure, yeah, no, this and that. Well, the ideas we got were kind of from an engineering team. So I knew we had to expand on them more than that, like add the company logo and maybe tagline and some color scheming. So we just took a guess at what was needed and what we thought was cool based a little bit on the fact that we've done a lot of presentation work and we just didn't hear back. Well, on one of them, we heard back like, okay, we wanted to do this. Like, okay, well, we'll make another, you know, concept on that. And eventually we just got back after we don't hear back for 3 days, we reach out like, hey, you know, just let you know, we've sent this out. We want to make sure you've got it. And they're like, you know, we had such a quick term. We went with another agency we worked with, you know, cause the styling just wasn't meeting our needs. We're like, oh shoot, really? Followed up by, you know, we're going to invoice you for that time. Cause it wasn't like a, anyways, we did get the ads back. And sure enough, all it was all their internal branding elements needed to be in there. The conceptualization and the imagery was very, very much aligned to us. We just didn't know what was missing. And that's hard. But, you know, I said, you know, we'd love to add this to our library, our knowledge library. And so if you guys had situations like that where you just kind of, you just don't know you're missing the mark until.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. All the time. And somebody will say, oh, so the work was fantastic. I showed it to our internal designer and they said, you have to do this, this, and this. Like, all right, I thought we already had that conversation. So.
Or visualization for you, Mike. It's got to be hard because everybody's like, I know the words, but now you took all the words away. You made it this cool graphic, but I don't know what that means.
One of the first things I ask is, do you have any preconceptions? Is there something that you've seen that you like? Because, you know, one of my favorite stories I ever heard was I was working with a company and they said, can you make it? And I'm not being, I'm not making fun of them. They said, can you make it more flashier? And I said, what does more flashier mean to you? Because more flashier might mean one thing, and I understand that's bad English.
Oh, no, no. What's Nolan's word?
Shuzhi or something. I don't know.
Yes, exactly. So what do you mean by that? And so the goal is just to get everybody on the same page. Are we all on the same page? What's missing? One of the things I advocate, and I'm often what Shoemaker Shoes, I wear horrible shoes because I make amazing shoes for other people, and then I don't follow my own rules. So
cobbler's kids have no shoes.
Yeah. So my kids just walk around with like
terrible presentations,
two by fours and duct tape. So I advocate having a project startup sheet where the whole goal is to make sure we're all on the same page. You know, what do you need it for? Which time frame? What are your specifications? What are your colors? What are you going to use it for, et cetera? Who's your audience? And sadly, sometimes I forget to ask because I've done it for so long and I fall prey to, I got it.
You know, one of the questions I always ask is, in addition to what do you like, and it doesn't have to be presentation, like, do you like a Nike website or do you hate, this commercial?
Clothes.
Just tell me. Right, exactly.
Wallpaper.
Just anything
I don't care.
To get me on the same page. But one of the things I'll say is, and tell me if there's something you like or dislike that has no reason. Like, if you or your boss hates the color green, I don't need to know why. Just tell me.
Yes.
Like, you don't have to justify it, but tell me.
Yes.
Like, because I don't want
to
hear it later.
Give me the rules to abide by.
I was working.
One of the things you raised was the, if we don't hear back, we'll contact them in 3 days.
Uh-huh.
Do you guys have a similar?
What's
your process? What's your schedule? Because I'm constantly disagreeing with my account management team.
Mine was when a proof is sent out. If a file's been sent out, we don't follow up immediately like, hey, did you get it? We 3 days. And it's usually a, hey, just make sure you got this.
Yeah. I don't have a hard and fast rule on that. Because some projects get pulled out a lot. I'll generally give them time to get back to me. But after a while, I just don't want it on my books and I'll tell them. But I always have one of my favorite contract clauses is, it's either 60 or 90 days, depending on the project. But I say that if the project is not done after 60 or 90 days of signing the contract, I reserve the right to finalize the project and bill for work. Because I don't want them saying, oh, the meeting got moved to the fall. Well, I'm billing. Done.
We have a 30-day inactivity. Yeah. If there's no activity on this, we're closing it out in 30 days. Yeah.
What I always put in my emails, one thing is I need confirmation of receipts. So there's ways to do it technologically, but I'll say, please confirm receipts so I know the email gremlins didn't need it. And then I always give people permission to tell me that they don't like it. So I put the onus on me as I say, tell me if it works for you or tell me what I miss or misunderstood. Because I'm not saying you messed up. I'm saying I messed
That's
up.
That's good.
And then
That's
typically good. People give me the whole, you didn't use our branding. Oops, sorry.
I got to do the confirmation more because I'll go back. And I'm gonna be like the old man here. Like millennials, I feel like the younger the people, I'll go back and forth with people. Like, email, like conversation, whatever. I'll finally send them the final file or whatever. And then nothing. And they don't get back to me. They didn't say they got it, whatever. And then like a week later, I'll say, or a few days later, I'll say, hey, did you get it? I just want to make sure. And they're like, oh yeah, we did it. We showed it. It's final. Project is done. It's like, what?
Yeah.
How about a thank you?
Well,
how about
they were done.
Yeah, they were done.
They knew.
But they don't feel that obligation to
the
at least
final
say.
Project. When it's the final deliverable, those are the only emails we put the please reply. And we also put the, that's not true. We definitely do the, please probably in an Outlook, we do the confirmation email.
I should do that. See, I don't always know that it's the final file. We might be on version, back and forth, back and forth.
And then you just don't hear anything for 3 days.
Right.
We sold our business already. We're gone.
Oh man, I had that. I had a client that split into two.
Oh.
It was the most, and they overpaid last year. It was the biggest accounting nightmare because I was like giving them credits, but I was giving it to the wrong company.
Oh.
And they were like, and I finally figured it out. But I don't like when a client overpays. I don't want it on my books.
No.
And we have prepayment constantly.
Well,
prepayment's not overpayment.
Yeah, that's
so
right. That's different.
One thing that's worked really well for us is, so I assume it runs in the same methodology in the States. You guys have a financial year. Your companies
okay. That's when
have
we get
billing
them.
Cycles. Mm-hmm. They have 3 month billing cycles generally. So you'll have
quarterly.
Yeah.
Yes.
So everyone in a company has their budget and they have a 3 month budget.
Yes.
And a week out from that 3 month budget,
they might
have
use it up.
$5,000, $10,000 left. That is when you send an email saying, "Hey, just want to let you know if you want to flush your budget down on us, that's fine.
That's smart.
You know, that's fine. Yeah. You can pre-purchase packs of 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 hours.
That's great.
For these amounts.
It justifies why they get the funding.
And you can use it for your next budgeting, and we'll just keep
that's
going.
That's really smart.
The I've hours never last 6 months.
It's a brilliant approach.
If you don't use them in 6 months, they die. But you can just basically use us as a service then.
I'm seeing the look in Troy's
eyes.
Yeah,
like, awesome.
I'm going to put an addition on my house now.
I want 20% on that.
I've never thought about that as, you know, we've never actually used it as a marketing tool. We've never been a great, you know, we get it all the time. Like, hey, we're going to start this project and we want to put X amount up front.
Yeah.
Even though we know the design specs aren't, you know, even cattle because we have to use up this budget. It's usually either year end or fiscal year end. But I'm thinking hard.
Yeah, that's a conversation with you and
Lorraine. Always find out their billing cycles and their budget cycles.
Companies have to justify getting that money again from corporate, so they need to spend it.
Often if they don't spend it, they lose it for the next budget cycle.
Tom, do you keep that on the books forever or do you have like a
six months. Just brilliant.
And then it goes away.
We let it roll over forever and ever and ever because it accumulates.
That's brilliant over here. Brilliant, nice.
Well, the reason why we
don't like that.
That's a liability on your business. That is a liability on your business.
I tell you why we do it is because it either always gets used or it never gets used. And either way, it doesn't matter because it's building that rapport with our clients. It's saying that essentially we got your back, come heck or high water. And it's never, in 25 years, it's never bitten us in the butt.
See, we got a little bit iffy on one big purchase, a client purchase, over $100,000 worth of work in prepayment of hours. And so that suddenly became a liability on our business. And so we had to know that if another client did the same thing or five more clients did the same thing, we wouldn't be able to deliver.
Right? You got to be careful on how they stack.
Yeah, and that was the problem.
Yeah.
That's why we put an expiry on it.
At your Entrepreneurs Roundtable, Nolan, there was a conversation going around about retainers. You were one of the few people, Tom, that actually said you take retainer work, I believe.
We do, yeah.
But so we don't have any active retainers, but when we put together our contracts, so I have this contract all ready to go. Should anybody want to be on retainer or use up their budget as Tom specs? But one of the specs we put in that I thought was really, it came as very good advice to us was we put in there, they can't stack all the hours at the end of the week or end of the month because we have to be able to handle a lot. Now, if they pre-plan it and they let us know, hey, we got this big project coming in, we want to reserve these days, that's one thing. But if they stack it all, so that was kind of like one of our retainer clauses.
Mike, do you have any retainers?
We do, and we have a few SLAs as well. We love SLAs. SLAs are our friends because it's
predictable. Can you define SLA for everybody?
Service level agreement. So essentially, it's basically getting service as a product kind of thing. So essentially, you have people at your beck and call, and you have a certain pool of hours that you can use in a certain amount of time. And we do the same thing. We say, look, you can't use all of your hours in 1 in 5 days. Because it won't work. So just let us know, like you would if you had in-house staff, let us know what to expect and when to expect it. Now, different between having a one person staffing your needs is that we can scale up. So there's not just one Tom. There's not just one Troy or one Nolan. There's a team. There's Mike, Nolan. So, you know, it's a job just Mike can do. And now they just expanded and you told me to expect it. Now all four of us tackle it and then boom, we bang it out and they're stoked.
Okay, well, I know we're running out of time here, so let's do one fun thing. We do this pro and tech tips. So it's got to be something you just think is very cool. It can be a conference. Let's just say not this conference because this is a good conference to brag about because it's the only one kind of in the world that deals with presentations only. It could be a tech tip, like a piece of gadgetry you use or travel thing. It could be a PowerPoint shortcut or just a way to use PowerPoint. By the way, you cannot use your shortcut, Mike, as billion dollar graphics as a tech tip because that's a shortcut.
I don't have one.
Oh, come on. You got to think of something cool.
Oh, no. I don't have a billion dollar graphics thing. No,
using billion dollar graphics is a tech tip.
Is a tech tip.
No, okay.
That would be like a great tech tip.
Well, I sold that product, so I don't know.
I know, but you can still recommend
it. That's true. No.
Yeah,
I
but
that's
still,
no.
still, I still consider it self-promotion there.
Yeah, I would not do that.
So I got one and I'm just going to go totally fun because I got this international trip in 2 days. So I bought this. It's basically like a hammock for your feet. I think is the way I can describe it. It's just going to be, I'm so excited.
Hey, you got your foot hammock?
Yeah.
We're going traveling.
No, think about it. I bought a flight for 13
Spain
hours.
Spain is going to love you.
Oh, no. It's on the plane only. It goes over the Now you guys got me flustered.
the table tray.
The table tray.
I thought SkyMall closed down.
Totally where this product belongs. Goes over the little table tray in front of you, and you can just adjust your leg height. And I'm pretty darn excited to try it out on this next 13 hours. I'm going to take a photo. It's going to be a Facebook post for sure. Like, look, it's not what it's called, but it's the only thing I can think of to call it.
I have a travel tip for you then.
Oh, okay.
When you travel, obviously, Americans, different plugs.
I bet you actually took a longer flight than I did. How long was your flight here?
17 hours.
Yeah.
And 2 days.
Yeah, 2 days in Dallas and then a few more hours to get here. Take one adapter, one international adapter, and one of your country's power boards. So you guys have power boards, right? That are like nine or ten plugs.
A power strip.
A power strip. Yes. Take a power strip because you can plug in all of your own stuff into one power strip.
But wait.
And then one adapter in the wall.
It works for you, but it doesn't work for us because we're on 110. If we plug a surge protected power bar into a 220 voltage, it blows up the power bar. Or if you're in a small hotel in Switzerland, you blow the fuse that looks like it came from the 1930s.
Yes, exactly.
And the little maintenance guy goes, do not do this again. I only have one left. It is 9 p.m. So I found out it works coming to the U.S. because we use the wimpier voltage.
Yes.
But if we go there, so I actually, now this is where it gets better. I use the small ones from IKEA, the little power bar, because they don't have surge protectors in them. Yeah. They're just a power bar, as you're thinking of. They're not surge protectors, and that way you don't
get start fires easier.
So yeah, I carry one of those with me when I travel international.
All right, I've got a PowerPoint.
Okay.
Because this is something I learned today, like at the...
Wait, we should have prep for this. Did you see the size of the power cube Tom is carrying around? You could use it as like a medieval weapon. It's like it looks like a Rubik's Cube with power ports on the side.
That's one design awards because it's got five.
What, because you use it as a self-defense weapon?
You've got five power plugs in that, in this tiny little box.
It is not tiny.
You got USBs in there as well. It's perfect travel power.
And
absolutely.
A refrigerator.
Yeah.
So this comes from, I learned this from Taylor Kroonquist. I don't know if he's
And he travels everywhere.
Yeah.
Taylor's awesome.
So cut and paste formatting. I didn't realize it. So we all know the format painter tool that you can double click it, or you may not know that. You can use the format painter brush and you can double click it to load it up.
Yeah.
But there are key commands for this as well. On the PC, it's command control. No, it's shift control C.
C.
Right.
You just add shift.
Yeah. So, right. So instead of, you know, normal copy is shift
C. Control C.
Control C. Yep. You add shift. That will pick up the format. So let's say you have a blue box with a red outline. It'll pick that up, and then you can paste it with control V shift. So again, you're just adding
shift. Just add shift.
Right. Yeah. But the cool thing about that versus the format tool.
Wait, that's already cool. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
But it'll save it as well for the whole presentation.
That's the really cool thing. Yeah. So instead of like loading up the format painter each time, it'll stay until you forever.
Until you load a new one.
So you can go to slides, a half hour later, you can still do, the V to the whatever.
It's just picking up the format painter or the eyedropper, I'm assuming.
No. It's a completely separate command.
Really?
Yeah.
So you could get two. You get one on the format painter, one on the eyedropper, because I do that.
The format painter will lose it as soon as you click on
the eyedropper. That's why I use the eyedropper, because it holds it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it's like the eyedropper.
That is pretty.
It also does any formatting. So if you've got shadows and things like that,
on the Mac, you have to substitute command. So it's shift command C.
Wow.
That's the thing.
I'm making a note and I'm going to go play with that. Thank you, Nolan and Taylor.
Taylor, yeah, you better. One thing is Logitech sent me a Spotlighter. It's a remote. And what I love about it is that you can just point and magnify stuff on your screen. So when I'm doing demonstrations, I can magnify the part that I'm speaking to. And it's also a mouse. So you can cursor over things and activate things.
We've talked about this remote. It's very, very cool.
No,
you took it to a new level. Because during his presentation today, he called his wife up and said, could you magnify everything while I keep talking and demos? Because he is doing a live demo. I'm thinking, that is delegation right there.
Well, my poor wife. She's awesome.
It was awesome. And it was great. And not only that, he's like, let me explain to you how to do it. So the whole audience of like 70 people suddenly knew how to use the Logitech Spotlight?
Spotlight. You're right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Logitech's representatives are very happy.
Yes. Yeah, I'm actually talking to them tomorrow at the product fair while we're here because I got a question for them about that.
Word, absolutely, me too. I should say PowerPoint.
Okay, we'll just do a quick
excellent
little wrap-ups.
Joke.
saying, who you are and where you're from and thank you. And how to find you, websites and whatever you want, Twitter and Tinder and whatever profile you want to...
Swipe right, swipe left.
Okay, okay, okay.
You'll see my PowerPoint portfolio.
We're doing this. We're doing, like I said, we're doing this corporate level thing. And one of the examples is they're going through Facebook. They're going through all these different uses of the internet. And Tinder is one of their examples. I'm like thinking, should this be coming from an executive?
Yes, exactly.
You even know it. You know, most executives, I don't know what that is. You know, yeah. Anyways, okay. Hey, thank you. This is Troy from TLC Creative Services. We're a studio team based in San Diego, and we are excited to have been at the Presentation Summit and have this conversation right here. You can find us at tlccreative.com or Facebook /TLC Creative.
Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. You can find me in the lobby bar tonight. And also at NolanHamesCreative.com and PresentYourStory.com.
I've been Tom Howell from Synapsis Creative. You can find us on SynapsisCreative.com, spelled S-Y-N-A-P-S-I-S Creative.com. And also on Twitter and Facebook and all the other social places.
Awesome blog, too.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Nice. Mike Parkinson, Billion Dollar Graphics at BillionDollarGraphics.com. Freaking me out, man. You said it. You completely... Twitter is at Mike_Parkinson. Just Google stuff and you'll find me.
And Pineapple Pen.
Oh, Pineapple Apple Pen. Pen, Pineapple Apple Pen.
I'm just leaving it right there. Done.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.